to condo craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from 1 minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the email the show tab.
And of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars, and the new schedule is out. We'll be talking about that in a moment. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You can link to our Facebook page, and you can link to our brand new HOA and condo blog at hoa-condoblog.com. And you can also join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements that we always send out about the show. And of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. Again, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com. And as we mentioned the last few weeks now, the Community Association Members Party was established to get legislation passed that would help all of you living in community associations throughout the state of Florida to know exactly what legislation each of you believe should be the top priority. There's now a survey on that website that allows you to specifically tell us what legislation you deem to be the most important. So please go to www.camp2012.net, click on the survey button. We intend on getting responses from thousands of you around the state. So many people have responded so far. The response has been great. And when the survey is completed, the results will be given to the Florida legislature, we promise. Again, that's www.camp2012.net. Click on the survey button and please participate in this important survey. All right, remember, let's get some housekeeping out of the way. Florida law now provides members of a condo board. You have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board. We're actually inching closer to the time period where associations start to send out their first mailings. And in fact, you can now even get certified 1 year before getting elected to the board. And one way of getting certified is by taking the Condo Craze Board Member Certification Course. Again, it's the first course that was written by an attorney and that was approved by the Florida DBPR.
And that's Eric. Eric has now certified over 2,500 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida Condominium Board of Directors. The course is fun. The course is free. And there's food served. You get to ask any questions you want, and you leave with a summary of everything you learned and a real nice certificate.
And everybody, if your board is actually interested in getting certified at your condo or at our law office, you can give us a call at Glazer & Associates at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and we can make arrangements for the course, you know, to either come to you or for you to come to us.
Absolutely. And Scott, that schedule is starting to grow. And I tell you, it's really flattering when we didn't actually even have the course yet here for South Florida, and I was getting emails all the time saying, come on already, start your course down here. We're eager to go. So in response, here we go. We actually have some of our seminars ready to go and ready to be advertised. So the next seminar is at the PM Expo event in Orlando. It's next week already, Saturday, August 15th. Then we're back on our home field, actually, and we'll be at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood on November 8th at 6 o'clock. And on December 1st at 10 a.m., we'll be at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in Naples, Florida. So if you want to register for either the Orlando, Hollywood, or Naples seminar, just go to the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and fill out the form, and Brian will get back to you.
The Waldorf Astoria.
The Waldorf Astoria, believe it or not, in Naples. Karen, how about before we start, we take Ron's call from Aventura.
All right.
How are you, Ron?
Hi, Mr. Glazer. How are you?
How are you?
I'm good. We have met before. I've taken your course, and we've been in touch through email and so forth, and you were instrumental in helping how to obtain a lot of the financial records and things with the help of the DBPR as well. And now my next question would be, now that you have a lot of information, if you find a lot of things that are questionable and you're not sure the next step, okay, what would be the next step to go? I mean, because the DBPO, of course, is a regulatory agency. They're limited in how much they can help you. But most of the answers I get is, you know, do the recall or try to change the board. But trying to get a lot of the unit owners involved has been a great challenge. And
well,
there are certain things that we found a lot of questionable things that we wanted to pursue. What is the best way to do it legally without getting into trouble?
Well, what's interesting is you say we, because a lot of times unit owners come forward and, you know, they find out that, let's just say, the condo association perhaps is doing things incorrectly. But the truth of the matter is, without beating around the bush, it oftentimes is very expensive to get the ball rolling and actually file that lawsuit in a circuit court or an arbitration action. And a unit owner by his or herself sometimes can't afford to actually get justice obtained. And that's the truth of the matter. So if I always tell people, try to get more than just yourself involved. If other people are being wronged, you got to rally the building, quite frankly, because, again, these situations often cost a lot of money to pursue. And if you can divide that cost amongst everybody and hire an attorney who knows what they're doing, then it's a lot better for you than footing the bill yourself, quite frankly.
Okay, what about when we approach the, you know, the certain people on the board and the managers and ask them specific questions? Why was money being spent on this without this? And this comes to my other question in regards to the attorney of the building, because he originally made it very difficult for us to get these records. And I had discussed with you also the fact that they took a credit line and borrowed money without unit approval. And I sent letters, I tried to get responses, and basically they all back off. Like, we didn't know anything, we didn't even get involved. I don't think they really want to go to that step. So how do you address that situation if the attorney seems to be working more for the board than he is for the best interest of the unit owners?
We can do a whole show, quite frankly, on that topic. But let's stick to the first issue, and that's when you cannot get certain answers to your question in a condominium. Now, unlike the HOA statute, the condo statute actually has a very intelligent means of dealing with this. And it's the statute states that if you write your association a letter and title it Unit Owner Inquiry, right, pursuant to Florida Statute 718.
Yeah, there you go.
I think it's Scott just mentioned it's 718.112. And if you call that letter a unit owner inquiry and you ask questions and you want answers, your board must respond to those questions.
Okay. But
Tell them what
can happen.
Well, if they don't respond, then that issue that you wanted the information on winds up in litigation. If the condominium association prevails, they can't get attorney's fees against you, and only you can get attorney's fees against them. So I still think it's a powerful tool, and it actually works well. But Ron, thank you very much for the call.
Got
to keep sticking and moving.
Yeah, and if you want to give us a call at the show, it's 877-850-8585. And last week we spoke about the attorney-client privilege and what documents fall under that definition. A fan of the show who wanted to know what steps he can take to make sure that his own mother-in-law can't move into the condominium, whether or not associations can sign confidential settlement agreements, and management companies who charge way too much to owners who just want to see the official records.
Yeah, and that's what kind of what Ron was talking about. And we wound up talking about a case out of New Jersey where the Supreme Court of that state held that despite the language in the governing documents that prohibits owners from putting up signs on their property, an owner was in fact allowed to put up signs promoting his own candidacy, all in the interest of First Amendment protected free speech. And while we're actually on the topic of political speech, our blog last week raised a real interesting question that started a lot of debate, and that is, what election can actually affect you more, the election of the President of the United States or the election for president of your own condo or HOA? Now, some of you may say, hey, that sounds like a silly question, but I can tell you I certainly tried to make the point that basically the higher you go up on the food chain, the less likely it is that that official can actually hurt you in your personal life. Now, for example, no matter who wins the next presidential election, that president won't be able to tow your car, foreclose in your home, slander you in public, harass you with threatening letters, lien and foreclose in your home, prevent your guests from visiting you, turn off your electric, scream at your kids or steal your money. And at one point or another in my career, I can tell you that I have known rogue association presidents to have done all of these things and more Any one of them can turn your life into a nightmare. Two or more of them can actually make it impossible to even live in your home. And on the flip side, I've seen presidents who turn the community from basically an army barrack into a fun-loving, friendly environment. So let's look at what some of our readers thought. Scott, start us off.
All right, Eric, let me open the mailbag here. We got a letter from a board of director, a former board of director, who writes in and says, making an educated vote in every election is important. Unfortunately, many make choices based on sound bites, name recognition, political correctness, etc. Don't rely on a little information. Take time to attend meetings, at least until you can see how your board manages your community. Do not rely on a few comments from a few neighbors. Sadly, until it hits home, most people can't imagine what can go on, what can go wrong, or are too busy to care. Apathy is a great asset to tyranny. In the case of HOA elections, unfortunately, you are part of a corporation, not a municipality. This makes it even harder to, quote, fight City Hall,
yeah,
unquote.
I actually love the line about apathy being a great asset to tyranny. We keep saying many times on the show that communities that actually get stolen from, those are oftentimes the one with little or no turnout at the board meetings. You know, attend a meeting once in a while, and don't be intimidated or afraid to ask a question, everybody. Great point from a former board of director member. That was good.
And Ariel writes in and says the president can really do all these things Eric's mentioned in the article while using all of the homeowners' money under their control.
Hey, exactly what we were talking about just now when Ron called in, and Ariel raises a good point. Unit owners, quite frankly, they're at a tremendous disadvantage when litigating against an association because it's the association, of course, who has all the money. And this is one of the reasons why the Community Association Members Party is promoting that just like in an HOA, condo disputes should start out in mediation as well. And about 5 years ago, I had the honor of being certified by the Florida Supreme Court as a circuit court mediator. And I've really mediated lots of condo and HOA disputes to conclusion, even when the parties believed there was no way the case would settle. It oftentimes does. So I'm a big, big proponent of it.
Yeah. I can't believe we were talking about tyranny just now. Patty Lynn writes in and says, Mr. Glazer is 100% correct. Your board of directors has the power to take your home, evict your tenants, and or assess you to the point of bankruptcy. Association members should stop electing their friends and vote for those folks whose only goal is to protect and preserve the community. Apathy is the enemy of good government. There you go. Again, apathy.
And COA, HOA, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Writes in and says, often owners don't really have a choice. Then one has to cast a vote for anyone, but not the rogue candidate, and make sure everyone else does. Don't you think that it is time to start prosecuting for violation of your federal civil rights? The idea worked in Iceland, so why won't it work here?
Karen, I don't know about condo law in Iceland, quite frankly, but in Florida, there is a provision in Florida statute. No, I don't. There is a provision in Florida statute 718 that does attempt to protect the civil rights of unit owners who participate in the affairs regarding their condo. And this is the SLAP statute, which stands for Strategic Lawsuits Against Public Participation. And basically, that statute protects unit owners from retaliatory lawsuits by their association. It allows for treble damages against the association, attorney's fees, and even an expedited court hearing.
Yeah.
All right, the Quill writes in and says, again, back to apathy. There's too much apathy in our condo today. We have several nationalities, some of which will never assimilate into the American culture.
Oh.
Yeah, I see a gradual...
I don't know if that's where we should be going.
Absolutely not. But he continues and says, I see a gradual but steady decline in our governance of our condominium in the next 10 years. Our present condo president rules like a dictator, and it's hard to change the board. And this email actually reminded me of another dumb comment that a listener made on the air a few years back, stating that, check this out, women have no place being on the board of directors. That was actually said on this show by a caller. Now, someone else here, obviously, in this email, thinks that certain nationalities shouldn't serve. So to the Quill, I say, if you don't like the fact that many different nationalities serve on your condo board, then America isn't apparently the place for you, buddy. And if you want to ride to the airport so that you can move back to wherever it is you came from, I am available. But let's do this. Yeah. Let's take our first break. And when we get back, we'll talk about plans to dot the South Florida skyline with an amazing number of new condos. We'll talk about Miami-Dade County going all out to catch tax cheats. We'll talk about two neighbors in a South Florida HOA going to war over a parking space. And we'll take more of your calls and emails. Give us a call, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Give us a call. We'll answer your questions. 877-850-8585. 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right. We actually did get an email from, let's see, Wayne. Wayne is in Oakland Park, and Wayne writes in and says, can a unit owner who is renting out his unit also serve on the association board? The owner actually lives in another county. And the answer to your question, Wayne, is yes, a unit owner, even though they're renting out his or her unit, they still get to serve on the association board. Makes no matter whether or not they live there at the condo or not, or even live in the same county or even in the same country, believe it or not, they can still be a member of the board. Now, what's different is, though, there is a statute, though, under 718 that says once a condo owner rents out his or her unit, they lose the right to also use the common areas in that community. For example, if an owner rents out their unit, the owner loses their rights to use the swimming pool, to use the gym and stuff like that. And obviously only the renter would get the right to use that. There can be no dual usage, but yes, that owner can in fact serve on the board. But that was a good question. All right. Scott, we've been talking so far about some boards who actually file lawsuits against their members really as a means of perhaps just trying to shut them up. We'd have some experience with that this week. But I think we both know that that tactic really isn't limited to just condo associations, is it?
Unfortunately, no, it's not. I think I can speak for both of us when I say that we have known an attorney or two who tried to do the same thing. And, when you criticize their conduct or their client's conduct in a court pleading, despite the fact that you have immunity for doing that, they try to put the brakes on you by filing a complaint with, the Florida bar, in effect stating that you are litigating, too well or too aggressively.
Yeah. And let's just say, quite frankly, to the credit of the Florida bar, they see through these types of allegations filed by one attorney against another during the course of litigation really as simply a means of trying to slow the other guy down. They don't tolerate it for a second, and rightfully so. But it's funny because Scott and I, we really got the greatest compliment recently, actually from some attorneys who claimed they were in effect, we were litigating too aggressively. And believe it or not, upon close examination of their legal bills, they were actually billing the condo association that they represent. You ready for this? And they were charging the association over $500 per hour to listen to the Condo Craze radio show and read our condo and HOA blog.
Yeah.
Now, if that isn't flattering, I don't know what is.
Yeah, well, I hope at least some of the board members and residents were listening to the show, too, or reading the column, too, for that kind of money, because, oh, my God, it was just absurd when I saw
500
that.
$500 an hour
to listen to the
show.
Actually,
if I remember correctly, that was actually $595 an hour.
Oh, that's awesome. See how much – see how talented the show can be? $600 an hour almost just to listen to it. I'm very flattered. Thanks, guys. All right, for those of you who think there's already way too many condominiums that were built here in South Florida and you don't want to see one more high-rise building being built, you may actually want to turn the radio off for a few minutes because things are about to get even more crowded than they already are.
Yeah, that's right, Eric. Developers just filed plans for two more condo towers in South Beach and another two on Brickell, bringing the total number of planned communities to 50 since the real estate crash began in 07, according to the website condovultures.com.
Oh, geez. And with these newly announced towers, more than 8,500 condo residents have now been proposed for the Tri-County region of Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. As we speak, 10 high-rise projects are actually under construction.
Yeah, and by the way, these condo projects are being proposed as still nearly 3,900 developer units that were created during the last real estate boom. They still remain unsold. You know, so you have to ask yourself and scratch your head, you know, why is still there a thought out there that these new projects are going to sell? You know, who's going to buy them, quite frankly? Certainly not out-of-work Floridians, but for some reason, the city commissions and all the planning and zoning boards out there for all our municipalities, they just keep on approving project after project after project, despite the fact that there are still thousands of units that remain unsold, and despite the fact that there are tens of thousands of units that are still in foreclosure. And in addition to all of that, we probably have one of the worst mass transit systems in the United States.
Yeah, we do.
So all of this actually makes you scratch your head, I got to tell you.
Yeah, in fact, our listeners may remember that just a few weeks ago, we spoke about the most expensive condo ever being sold in Dade County. Well, guess what? That record didn't last too long because last month, a 21,000-square-foot unit at the St. Regis condo in Bal Harbour sold for a cool 25 mil.
And on the one hand, we read that there's still 3,900 unsold units. And on the other hand, we read that supply is dwindling. According to the Palm Beach Post, condo prices are coming back strong and, in fact, have climbed for 6 months in a row.
Yeah, it's kind of funny reading the newspapers every day because, like you were saying, on the one hand, we read supply is dwindling. But on the other hand, the Herald reported that foreclosures in Miami-Dade rose 11% in May, marking the sixth consecutive year of increases. So we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get back. I see we have some callers on hold. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates, taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And we do have Susan and Boca on the phone line for us. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely.
Thanks. I have a question. I've been studying Chapter 718, Condominium Act.
Yes.
And I've learned that, and I'm just a resident of a condominium, I've learned that there are two parts of the Condominium Act that relate to what I'm going through. One is that the condominium is responsible to maintain the common elements. The other part of it says that the floor coverings are not covered or are not payable by the condominium. So here's my question. In the event that the condominium has been negligent to maintain the common elements, and there's carpet damage, is that Condominium Act section overruled due to liability or negligence?
That is a great question, and your hunch is correct, Susan. If the condominium association fails to maintain the common elements and you can prove negligence, then yes, they are responsible for all the damages that occur in your unit as a result of their negligence. Oftentimes where the confusion comes in is that a pipe bursts in a wall and a common element wall and a common element pipe burst, flooding somebody's unit, and automatically the unit owner says, well, the association's responsible for that damage. No, they're not, unless you can show that the condo association was somehow negligent in failing to maintain that pipe or failing to correct the problem quickly enough. And oftentimes that is difficult, if not impossible, to prove. On the other hand, if you can show that that flood in your unit occurred as the result of the association's negligence, you do have an expert who's willing to come to court and testify and say, for example, that the condo knew of this problem, they kind of had notice about it, should have hired an expert to clean out the pipes or service the pipes, and didn't do it, and then the damage occurs and that expert again is willing to come to court and testify for you in that regard, you have a winning case. And yes, they're going to be responsible for fixing your carpet or paying for your carpet and any other damages that occur in your unit.
All right, I appreciate that. Can I ask you another question in the same concept here?
We charge for two questions, Scott, right? All right, go ahead. All right, okay.
Thanks.
Sure.
I had damage to my carpet as a result of cracks in the building structure that was found. Well, they didn't do the first repair attempt until almost 2 years later. That's number one. That alone, I think, constitutes negligence, right?
Right.
That they
could,
didn't.
Could be if they knew about it and didn't take care of it, absolutely.
Well, I alerted them about the problem, and the manager wasn't doing the job, and the board wasn't doing the job, and they did the first assessment, you know. Well, they did. They actually had a. It just went on for ungodly length of time. So, but the question is, in terms of preventive maintenance, is there any law? Because I wasn't the first unit that had cracks and internal damage. Can I also say that they should have been responsible to maintain, to do preventive maintenance on the cracks in the building? Or some people on the board say, well, buildings will crack, we can't stop them.
Well, I guess the question would be, I think, you know, when they first knew that people were suffering damages, what steps did they take to prevent that damage from getting worse? And it seems to me that you put them on notice, you know, 2 years ago, and they waited all this time to actually do something about it, perhaps making the problem worse. So I think that's where you probably want to focus your case on, but you're not going to be able to do it unless you have an expert come forward and testify that the board was, in fact, negligent. Your case will be much easier to prove if you have, in fact, expert testimony. But Susan, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I have is I went back into the condo minutes. I have emails where I was talking to the then treasurer who then became president. What we have is a complete absence of records in the condo association. Oh, we had the roofing company. They hired the roofer to come out and said it wasn't a roofing problem, it's some kind of a waterproofing problem. That expert is coming to, you know, to trial, but I'm doing it in small claims court. But it's hard to show, in other words, there's a complete absence of records for a year and a half.
Yeah, but what you do have
even
is...
Even though I was corresponding.
Right, but you do have a company that comes in and says, yeah, we were asked to look at it. We told the board it wasn't a roof. We told them it was waterproofing. And if they didn't make that waterproof correction repair, then you have a very good shot at proving negligence. But on that note, Susan, we got to take Al's call from Delray. How are you, Al?
Good morning. I want to know if the following is harassment and what proper notification the HOA or condo association must provide. Two out of the last three times I go out of town is when they send me notification you have to trim your shrubs and repair your patio in the back. And these are all, in my opinion, horrendously cosmetic. They're not a safety issue. It's in the rear, so no one sees it. Once it was a certified letter from their attorneys. Another time it was just a certified letter from the association's letterhead. They know I'm out of town. So in a way, it feels like harassment. When I'm here for 9 months, for 9, 10, 11, 12 months, they don't knock on the door and say, can you trim your shrubs or take care of these things? It's only when I'm out of town. Is that blatant harassment?
No, I can't take the position that that's blatant harassment. You know, we've had... Lots of times we spoke on the show about just because somebody doesn't live in the community a certain number of months of the year doesn't mean that you get to forget about the unit and the unit's maintenance upkeep.
No, but this is my domicile. It's not that I'm a snowbird. I'm here 90% of the year.
Right. So let me ask you, did you write back to the board and say, hey, I'll be back in town in 30 days or so. I'd appreciate a little extension of time.
The first time when I was certified from their attorneys, I called the condo president from out of town and said, hey, I'm coming back in 3 weeks. What's the big deal? And they said, all right, we'll meet, you know, come see me when you get back. The other time I sent a certified letter saying I intend to make those repairs when I return, or we'll talk about it when I return, and they didn't contact me, and to be honest, I didn't contact them.
See, lack of communication. You know, based upon what you're telling me, Al, it certainly doesn't seem like your board did anything deliberately harmful to you, and sometimes it's all about communications. But, Al, thanks for the phone call. All right, before we actually went to the break, we were talking about some articles that actually come out in the newspapers and say that foreclosures on inventory are so incredibly high, yet in the same newspaper, actually, you find second articles that say, you know, everything is terrible. So you really don't know, you know, which way to believe. again, same paper, you can have things are good and things are bad. So I think there's a theory out there that says, you know, if we tell people the market is great, we'll actually make the market great,
right,
despite the fact that, you know, perhaps the numbers don't agree. But in any event, you know, we still have a long way to go because we are still 48% below the prices that the condo units were selling for at the heyday in 2006. So again, so no matter what the newspapers say, the prices are still a lot less than they were when things were good. But let's talk about fraud for a moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, our listeners may remember having the Broward County property appraiser, Lori Parrish, on the show about 2 months ago. And I questioned her about the problem of owners sometimes breaking the law and filing for homestead protection on more than one property. And she made it clear that if you get caught doing that, people can face huge monetary penalties.
Yeah, the Miami Herald did a really interesting article about this problem the other day. And they say that, quote, these days, gambling on getting caught is a fool's game.
Yeah, and to remind everybody, here's the price of actually getting caught wrongfully filing for homestead. And those of you who claim homestead up north and claim homestead down here, listen up, because I actually know some people who this happened to. Here's the penalties.
Yeah, like Derek Jeter?
Up to 10 years. Don't talk about Derek Jeter on the show, by the way. All right, up to 10 years of unpaid back taxes, plus a 50% penalty and 15%
wow,
annual interest. Now, one homeowner who they made an example of, quite frankly, wound up owing, if you can believe this, $403,329.70. And they made sure to get that 70 cents, believe
absolutely
me.
Absolutely. And at least in Miami, there certainly are a lot of resources being thrown at this problem. There are six detectives from the Economic Crimes Bureau of the Miami-Dade Police Department that work with 15 other investigators at the property appraiser's office. In July alone, the property appraiser filed $11 million in homestead liens.
Unbelievable. And, of course, what's the reason for this dramatic rise in enforcement proceedings and the need to catch these tax cheats? Money, of course, revenue that's needed for a city that really keeps suffering from one financial crisis after another. And further proof that it's really all about the money is the fact that despite the fact that many of these people clearly committed fraud or even tax evasion, that in this case is so easy to prove, there is not a single criminal prosecution that's been filed. So really, it's all about the money. And here's what's interesting, though. This is no knock on the investigators or the police, but the truth is so many of these violators get caught simply because their neighbors rat them out. But before we go further, Linda from Boca, we see you on hold. Let's take our final break of the hour, taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
The final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer and Associates. The number to call is 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585.
All right, before we went to the break, we were talking about tax cheats in Miami-Dade County and how the county is throwing a tremendous amount of resources going after people who claim dual homesteads. And like I was saying, what's interesting is that, again, no knock on the investigators or the police, but the truth is so many of the violators are getting caught, again, simply because the neighbors in the condo rat them out.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised about that, Eric. Your neighbor would rat you out in a condo or an HOA, you know, anytime usually. The bottom line today is that it's a little more difficult to get away with things today than ever before because your whole life is basically on the internet. Anytime they want, your neighbor can find out what properties you own if you claim homestead on them and if you have mortgages or even if you're in foreclosure.
Yeah, I tell you, it's pretty amazing. Some people, you know, to this day, especially some older folks, they come into the office and you show them what can be found out on the internet. And I tell them, oh, yeah, I see that you have this mortgage or that mortgage, or you also own an additional property here and there. They cannot believe that all this is out there for everybody to see. Really, there are no secrets anymore. And if your neighbor is eager to get you for whatever reason, and I'm telling you, we see it all the time, they really do have, with the internet out there, a potential arsenal at their disposal. And on that note, There was a real interesting case earlier this week on Help Me Howard, and I don't know if you guys saw it. Scott, I showed you the videotape in the office, and I'm hoping a lot of our listeners actually saw it. And it even reminded me of my own house and how my kids sometimes act when someone parks on the street in front of my home. But the bottom line is a married couple who just had their first child, they live in an HOA, and they have an outdoor garage to park their car, but there's also a parking spot right in front of their home, but the spot blocks the mailbox. Well, their neighbor across the street is kind of playing a game with them, and the neighbor makes sure to deliberately park their car in front of this couple's home every single day. It's going on for like years now, despite the fact they can park their car in front of their very own home. And they even make sure never to pull out of the spot unless their second car is immediately able to pull right in and take over the spot again. But here's actually where it gets worse. Because the car blocks the mailbox, the post office actually on several occasions has refused to deliver their mail, you know, causing these poor people to have to go to the post office every day, believe it or not, to pick up their own mail. So I got to tell you, this neighbor dispute is really ugly, and Help Me Howard was asked what to do about it. I got to tell you, I know how it would be handled in Brooklyn. I got to tell you, I can assure you that car, that neighbor's car, you'd actually watch it fit into the mailbox at some point, and when all said and done. But, Scott, what are these poor people to do?
Yeah, well, Help Me Howard suggested that the HOA may want to adopt, step in and sue the people who are deliberately parking in front of their neighbor's home. And you know what? I agree. The bottom line is, though, by them parking there every day, they are preventing the neighbor from getting their mail. And as we know, every deck or every covenant contains language that basically says you can't be a nuisance to your neighbors. So I'm thinking if they sue, they win.
Yeah, I agree with you, Scott. I think they win, too. And I can't see a judge basically telling these people, too bad, if you want your mail, you got to go to the post office every day. I also think that since the neighbors know this and still won't cooperate, if I was a judge, I got to tell you, I'd hit him with punitive damages as well at this point, and I'd even award the plaintiff, of course, all their fees and costs when all said and done. And the association, you know, check this out, the association can also consider them fining them every day, and when that fine hits $1,000, foreclose on the house. Now, I'm guessing those neighbors will wake up fast and they'll realize that that spot won't be worth fighting for once they get foreclosed on.
What is wrong with people? You hear stories like this and it just makes you wonder, what is it that drives people to this kind of behavior?
Well, I'm watching, Scott, I know it's one of your favorite shows. I was watching Seinfeld the other night.
It was when it was on.
What a show.
15 years ago.
I love watching the reruns. It's my downtime from 11 to 12 at night. And it was the episode where Jerry goes to visit his parents at Boca del Vista condo, and Jerry is actually watching everybody fight with everybody else really over essentially nothing. And at one point, he starts screaming, like, what is it with this place? Why not just put up a fence around the whole thing and call it a mental institution? And I got to tell you, some people would agree.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is we have stories like this is because when you put a few hundred people and you put them all in the same block or in the same building, you're going to have a few jerks.
Yep,
all right?
Exactly.
And that's all this guy is that's doing this. He's a big jerk.
Agreed. On that note, how about we take Mike from Lake Worth? How are you, Mike?
Hey, guys. I just found your show. I've been listening 5-0 all the time. Mail today, something new.
All right. Hope you like it, Mike.
I found it interesting so far. I live in an association in Lake Worth, which, excuse me for the language, it's a white trash area. And we've got a condo commando for a president that will not relinquish his he's the president of the board. He charges $600 a week for his accounting that we supposedly, because we supposedly don't have a treasurer. And basically, three-quarters of the neighborhood shows up for meetings, and he's always found a way to still keep himself in office. The last meeting I was at, he was basically voted out, and he still found a way to retain his position on the board.
Wait, Mike, let me stop you for a second. That's $600 per week. Who's collecting that money? Maybe I didn't understand that.
Well, he is actually, and he won't actually relinquish the books to people that are actually fighting him. This has been going on for 5 years. He's got renters that he actually makes them vote for him as far as being a, I don't know what the word is, but it's basically a cluster blank. And, well, you know, basically everybody's given up in the neighborhood on fighting him. We've got eight people, which he calls the H8 gang here in Lee's Crossing, and he continues to use association's money to fight his.
It's funny, Mike. You raise a whole bunch of issues that we've been speaking about all through the show. Number one, that sounds like a good gig, Scott. $600 per week to do the accounting for the association. Yeah, that sounds actually like a great job. But of course, that's probably illegal. But again, members in an HOA, there's not much you can do about it other than start filing lawsuits. So what you got to do is rally your neighbors and actually go to court, where perhaps condo members have the ability to start out with filing a complaint in the DBPR first, and they would investigate it. You don't have that luxury, so again, it's all on you. Go to court and get an injunction requiring him to stop it. We got about a minute left.
Let's go to Linda
from Boca is back. How are you, Linda?
Hey, how are you?
Okay. You got about a minute, Linda.
Okay, well, my question is that when there are foreclosed properties in the community, and I saw on public record that there were liens that were placed on the property for homeowners associate for the fees, for the yearly fees. How does the homeowners association, once that property is foreclosed or taken over by the bank and then possibly sold again, and that lien has to be satisfied, how would that reflect in the financial statements? And is that an advantage to the association?
Linda,
how does that all work?
Linda, if the bank actually forecloses on the property, you're wiped out.
Well, except for 1 year or 1%, whichever is less. 1 year of assessments or 1% of the mortgage, whichever is less. That's all the bank has to pay, and the HOA takes a loss on everything else, and that's how it, quite frankly, should be reflected on the books as a loss. I hear the music playing in the background. Make sure to read our blog tomorrow. Interesting blog topic, which also happens to be my birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, how about this for a blog topic? The opposite of a condo commando, the do-nothing board member, should be real interesting. Looking forward to our readers' comments. See you again, same time, same place next week on Condo Craze and HOAs, everybody. Have a great week.